and welcome to episode 38 of a Thai football podcast, coming to you live today from Konkan Sports School. I'm here to watch Konkan Sports School play against Chonburi in Thai Women's League 1. It's a nice little setup they've got here. Looks like an artificial pitch, a couple of stands with seats installed that look like they've seen better days, but they'll do, they'll suffice. The crowd at the moment, I would say, numbers about 20, free to get in. This place is a long way from anywhere. It's quite a drive from where I live and quite a drive from the city. Still, looking forward to this match. And then the rest of the show, we've got two interviews, one with Mark Watson from Futera United, one with Russ Horsley from Higher Sports Academy, and then we've got our old friend Bill Greaves, who submitted a plan to attract crowds to Thai football, and they're all three of them are well worth listening to, so stick around for that. I'll be back at half time with an update and any other details I see fit to mention. But yeah, looking forward to this, a different experience for me. Let's see what happens. It's half time here and the visitors go into the break 1-0. Chonburi have completely dominated this game. I don't think I've seen such a one-sided game for a long time. I was going to say from 1 to 11 they look very impressive, but the keeper, apart from one easy save, has had virtually nothing to do all the first half. But very impressed with the Chonburi players. Like I said, they all look comfortable on the ball, they pass it around, there's a lot of movement, all very skillful. I am expecting more goals in the second half. Really, they should be 3 or 4 up. When the goal did come, it was a bad mistake by the goalkeeper. You've got to feel sorry for her. She hasn't really done much wrong, but she got caught in possession and Chonburi forward was left with an easy task of just slotting the ball into an empty net. Crowd's grown considerably. Like I said at the start, we were lucky if there were 20 people in, but I'd say we've comfortably in three figures now. It's quite encouraging to see. Nice little atmosphere, as you would expect. It's a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon, if I'm being honest. There's lots going on around the campus as well. Looks like there's beach football going on behind me. There was some futsal being played earlier, some indoor seven-a-side football. There's obviously lots of people enjoying their Saturday afternoon. So let's see what the second half has in store. I'm not really one for making predictions, but really, if this doesn't end 4 or 5-0, I'll be very surprised. I think Konkan Sports School will tire as well in the second half. There were one or two heavy legs out there towards the end of that first 45 minutes. They've tried. They've not given up, to their credit. Their number 10, who's the main striker, has been running herself into the ground, chasing lost causes, trying to make herself available as an outlet. But really, I am expecting them to droop in this second period and Chonburi to take advantage. They do look a lot fitter, a lot stronger, better drilled. So let's see. Full time here at Konkan Sports School. Final score, Konkan Sports School 0, Chonburi 3. As I predicted at half time, it was pretty much one way traffic through that second period. All credit to Konkan, they never gave up, kept battling away. Based on what I've seen today, if anyone finished above Chonburi this season, they'll win the league. This side looked very impressive indeed. They've definitely got a plan. They play to their strengths, that everybody knows the part that they're playing in the team. Very, very impressed with what I've seen today. Highlight the second half, apart from the two goals, the Konkan Sports School subs were warming up just in front of me, and I don't think I've seen three people enjoying themselves as much as those three. They weren't doing much in the way of getting ready to go on to play a professional football match, but they were enjoying every minute of what they were doing, and it was so good to see. Bit of a contrast between the two sides, to be honest. Chonburi, very, very professional, very slick. Everything they did, you can tell it's part of a professional club. It definitely had that stamp. Now it's over to Rob. Over to you, Rob.
Yes, Dale, thanks for that. It sounded a great day out. Please, everyone, give it a go, the Women's League. Well, there are several hours before I head to Ubon Ratchathani, and it's not quite James Richardson and Gazzetta dello Sport, but I'm going to have a quick round-up of yesterday. Very entertaining 3-3 draw in T1 between Port and Ratchathani. Bangkok United with a very important 1-0 win away to Chiang Rai. And we don't go so low as to make jokes about the Sukhothai team being seen heading towards 7. But I'm afraid they got a proper pummeling at BGPU. Pattumtani coming out 7-1 winners. And we've got a report from one of the other games. And I bet you can't guess who it's from.
Thai Football Podcast. Match reports.
Sawadee khap, good evening from Dragon Sawa Park. The match between Ratchaburi FC playing home against Lampung Warriors. The match has ended 2-0 for the home team. Scorer was Krishan Anon in the first half and Matheus Lima doubled the lead in the second half. Well, I think this match is about related to the national call-ups recently. The players just proving how solid they are defensively, as Kampon, another clean sheet, has recorded 5 clean sheets from 6 matches. That is some record. Another one is Jonathan Kemdi, that he proved once again how solid they are defensively in the back and playing very well, also helping the attack. Come on, you Dragons!
Thanks ever so much for that, Reza. Great report as ever. Fantastic to hear your enthusiasm. It's time to get ready for today's action in the Semi-Pro League North East region.
Tied to Ball Podcast. Match reports.
A warm welcome to the Mook Stadium here at Von Cavalitkul University in Korat for today's semi-pro Northeast League game between the students of Von Cavalitkul University and Royet. As you can hear, the atmosphere's already started, predominantly by the majority of the fans coming from Royet with a number of drums. Just to give an outline of the two teams here, really, both have played 2 games so far, and the students have lost both. Royet have got a 1-1 lost 1 ratio, so maybe my money's on the away team today. It's half time here at the Mook Stadium, and the score is Von Cavalitkul University 0, Royet 0. It's been quite a good first half, really. Been quite impressed with the endeavour and vigour that both teams have shown, considering the conditions they're playing in. It's extremely hot here, and to be honest, the pitch is one of the worst I've ever seen, really. Very patchy, very bone dry, really. But the ball has invariable bounce in different parts of the pitch, and it really has been a test for the players throughout. But they've tried their best, and it's been thoroughly entertaining. Probably the score is a fair representation of how things have gone. Both keeper has pulled off a brilliant save, and there's been numerous half chances. Let's see what the second half's got in store for us. Final score here at the Mook Stadium, it's Von Cavalitkul 0, Royet 1. Highly entertaining game, and very little to choose between the sides. If anything, maybe Royet slightly a little bit more experienced than the youngsters, but they certainly gave it a go, and I expected the score to be a lot wider at the start of the game. This was my first dalliance with semi-professional football here in Thailand, and I must admit I was pleasantly surprised. I've seen many T3 games that have given less enjoyment than this one, without a doubt. The crowd played its part as well. I'd say roughly 200 people here, with a good away following from Royet contributing to the atmosphere.
Rob's Roving Report.
Here we are, Ubon OMT Stadium, formerly the host of top-level football here in Thailand. And it is an absolutely superb venue. It brings to mind a upper-class National League ground in England, or perhaps a second level in Holland or Belgium. Close to the pitch, all stands with a fantastic view. Free admission this afternoon, it's close to the city centre. And I was a bit reticent about the chances of being able to get a beer, but plenty of stalls, shirts on sale for 390 baht, great selection of everything, welcoming staff, and a great place to come and watch football, quite simply. Anyway, today, there's 2 teams currently on 6 points above the competitors of this match. The visitors were top before yesterday. If they win today, then they will go back to the summit, 1 point ahead of the others. If Ubon Poly United win, they'll join the other sides on 6 points. So it's a good competitive competition here in the North East. The visitors today from Udon Thani, not to be confused with Ubon, as many a visitor has found out when they've arrived at the wrong airport. So we'll see what today brings. Both teams coming in with full of confidence, no doubt. So yeah, half time here, 1-0 to the visitors, Udon Banjan United. I've been downstairs to buy a beer, and what a view this is of a football ground. It's an amazing little stadium. Really should be gracing the top level of Thai football. Down in the changing rooms, meanwhile, I would think that the Ubon boss has got to rethink his tactics. He's been undone by a faster, quicker side so far. But 45 minutes to go, will the youngsters carry on their rapid pace? We'll have to wait and see. Full time here at Ubon OMT Stadium, and what a good victory for the visitors today. Udon Banjan United, a fantastic display of pace, pressing, skill, they had everything. And to be fair, the game could have ended up a lot more than 2-0. And Ubon towards the end forced two great saves out of the visiting keeper. The woodwork at both ends had a good game, rattled a couple of times. As we close this report, the visiting team have gone across to the home ultras and they're getting a rapturous evasion, and that's what we love about Thai football. So, we go back top to Udon Banjan United. Ubon Poly United in a bit of a state now. That's the second game they've lost. Each team play 8 games. Let's see who goes up at the end of the semi-pro division. For now, back to Dale in the studio.
Thanks, Rob. And another great weekend out and about watching Thai football. It was nice for me to get a game in. I didn't think I'd get another match in before I head back to England. And it was good to get to the Thai Women's League. And as an extra bonus, it was Chonburi as well. It was as if the planets had all aligned for me on Saturday, Rob.
And even a new ground for you to tick off.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd never been there before. It's quite a way out of the city and quite a trek from where I live. But it was worth it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I'd encourage anybody to get along and support the Thai Women's League and get to some games. Now, we've got 2 interviews and 1 feature lined up for you that push towards the future of Thai football, really. The Madam Pang era, I guess we've got to call it. So we spoke to Mark Watson, who is the chairman, the owner of Futira United. And he's not been put off by the events of last week. If you remember, he came on the programme to talk about the bizarre situation of the game against EGY Thai last weekend. That's not put him off. In fact, if anything, it's made him more determined. So this is my chat with Mark. This is fascinating. I really enjoyed this talk.
A Thai Football Podcast interview.
Welcome back, Mark. You were on last week talking about the very strange incidents that happened at one of your games, but today you've joined us to have a more general chat about your club and what you're all about. So thanks for coming back on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dale. Second time now, mate. All good.
Futira United. Am I saying that right? I've been saying Futira.
Yeah, Futira United is how I pronounce it. It's made up of the words future and era. So a little bit of background. Futira is a trading card company. It's been around for, say, 30 years. They make trading cards for some of the biggest football teams in the world. So Barcelona, Arsenal, Liverpool, etc. as well. And one of the things that I do at the company, I'm the creative director of the company, but also we've headed up this project of starting a football team in Thailand, Futira United, basically to see how far we can go, but also with the sideline that the fans, or we call them the holders of the club, get to make a lot of decisions within the club, from normal stuff like getting to choose the kit design, but then going all the way to they made the decisions on the players we signed, and they also get to choose some of the tactics on match day as well. So they get to vote on who plays in certain positions, etc. It's a totally unique concept. It's not new for us. We've been working on this for 15 years. We've trialed it in England in the Sunday leagues. Some of you who have been following Thai football for a long time will remember that we worked with a company about 13 years ago called Seeker, where we had a T3 team called Futira Seeker. That was our first foray into Thai football. And in the last 2 years, we went into amateur football and sort of started up again. It's Futira United now. And since then, we've tried to work our way up the leagues with the ambition of, I'm sure the same ambition as every club here, is to go through amateur football and all the way through to going into T1 and hopefully becoming the next Mong Tong or Buriram. Or big ambitions, but it's been so far been going really, really well. And every ambition that we've had, we've hit. We've been promoted every year in amateur game. And obviously this year we've gone into the Thai semi-pro. So the first rung of the ladder of the pyramid in Thailand. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we can get out of there within 1 to 2 years and start our journey into pro football, basically.
It sounds like a huge project. How does it actually work? I mean, I know there is an issue in Thai football with owners and chairmen and chairwomen sitting on the bench, and the pressure that that puts on the coach is immense. I know from talking to coaches how difficult they find it. What about the people that coach your team when they've got presumably hundreds, thousands of people trying to influence who they sign and what their tactics are? I mean, it's all right choosing a kit, but when it actually comes to the playing side, how do they manage with that? It must be a logistical nightmare, surely.
It's difficult, but they built it with us. So it's not like we brought in a manager after we decided on how to do this. I've known the management team for many, many years. I run an academy with them, the PSW Academy as well. Our head coach, Pizal Rumroy, he used to play for Thai Pharma Bank. He played for Thailand as well. He's been along for this journey from day one. So he understands how it all works. He sort of put his own input onto how to make this as perfect as it could be. And it's definitely worked. The coaches here have embraced it. I don't speak a word of Thai and they don't speak a word of English. So we found a way that we can all communicate together. But so far, like, to give you the statistics, in league football in 2 years, we've lost one game. Going into this season, we've got a good chance, I would say. They're very good coaches, but they work with the fans slash holders to sort of make sure that everybody's making decisions that we're all happy with. Like, they give them, say, 4 votes for every single game or 3 votes for every single game. So if the coaches can't quite work out who should play left back for that game, that will be a vote that's put up. Like, if you're an Everton fan, you're not having to vote every week to see if Jordan Pickford's in goal, for instance. But you might have to decide who's playing, like, is it Calvert-Lewin or is it Beto up front, etc. That might be a decision that you now have to make. And so that's how we run it. There's 3 votes a week or 4 votes a week, and the holders and the fans get to vote on what their beliefs are. And in all the time we've done it, maybe the coaches have disagreed a few times, but it's always worked out for good, basically. I know a lot of people look at this and go, it's sort of taking the proverbial out of football. But my belief is that fans should have a say. Like, they don't have enough of a say. I'm a West Ham fan. I've never felt so disconnected to my club as I do right now. I have no say in anything. Owners who could leave tomorrow, coaches that leave after a few bad games, players that leave for money. The one constant is always the fans, and they have the least say in it all. And in effect, they fund it as well. They fund the club, yet they have no say at all. So what we wanted to do was turn that on its head. It wasn't something we just came up with and we thought we'd experiment with people's lives, etc. 15 years of building this and testing it and huge amounts of money put into it by us to make sure that we're not just playing at this. If I turn around and say our ambition is to get to T1, we have a roadmap to try and get into T1. This is not a club that doesn't want to get promoted. It's not a club that's doing it because they want, it's going to say something there, but like that they want the clout, if you like. We literally want to get promoted every year if we can, and we will put the backing behind it to make that happen. I think that makes us pretty unique here, basically.
Oh, definitely. That passion's certainly coming across, Mark. I'm certainly getting that from you, without a doubt. Now, what about the holders? How does someone become a holder? Do they approach you, or is there some sort of secret society on the dark web that you have to go through to get involved?
A little bit like that. We use the blockchain. So they buy a token, an NFT token, which allows them 1 vote, basically. They then use the blockchain, and we have like a voting system that's built on the blockchain for them to go on and then put their vote in every week. Some guys will go out and buy huge amounts of the token, so they've got a bigger vote. And that's also how it works. They work in a community as well, which means that they all talk about what they believe is the best way forward. And there's always leaders in that community who say what they think. We've got Blue, who I'm sure you'll meet one day. He puts such an incredible amount of effort into everything. He knows everything about every player. He knows every stat about every single one of our players. It's really intelligent decisions that people are making. We've had moments where the coaches weren't sure what to do on the bench, and we've had holders send them team sheets with the last 5 minutes to go to show them all the things that could happen and all the decisions that they could make, etc. It's a totally different way of running a football club and making decisions in a football club. And it's not a gimmick, Dale. That's the big thing on this. Like, people think that what we are is some kind of like crypto bros, or like, I have no interest in cryptocurrency. I have an interest in how this technology can work to build a community around it. We're football people. Like, my life since I was 9 years old is I'm a football fanatic. I've worked for all my adult life. I've never done anything else. And I've dedicated, as I said, 15 years of my life to this one concept. to try and prove that it can work in the way that I believe it can work. It's certainly not what I think people believe. There's many clubs that have been built off the back of people just trying to get funds off a big group of people, and then they put it into the club and the club goes to ruin. For us, everything is literally thought through to the nth degree, and we have very experienced people behind it to make sure that we're not doing things in the wrong way. And to top it off, we have an absolute banging kit. That's the other thing as well, Dale. The fans get to vote on what the kit looks like, and I don't know if you've seen it, it's black and gold and it's pretty special, I've got to say. It's every year we really pride ourselves on kits. We sell insane amounts of kits around the world compared to what you would think an amateur football club in Thailand would be able to sell, and it's because of what the kit looks like. So we manufacture our own kits. We have our own teamwear company as well. We built a production team from scratch to give people jobs so that they could become a production team and basically stream every single game. We have commentary in English on every single one of the games. When I say commentary, it's more all of us sort of shouting at the referee. The club is built around new tech, but at the core of it is football culture and understanding why, as a 9-year-old boy, I was so taken by this like beautiful game that we all spend all our time watching and thinking about. And this is my sort of, without being ridiculous, it's sort of my love letter to football, basically. And hopefully it can carry on in the way that it has. And we can sort of hit some of those ambitions that we're trying for.
Well, I hope so. Because that, like I said earlier, that passion is really coming across tonight, Mark. And I have seen the kit and it is very beautiful. How would someone get hold of one of the shirts if they wanted one? That was the other thing. I've not seen any other online presence. I know you're quite active on Twitter, but have you got a website? Yeah. Do you have a Facebook page? I mean, how can people get in touch with you, or how can people follow what you're doing?
If you go to futereunited.com, we've got a shop on there, so you can buy the shirts on there. We've also got a shop at the ground on home games as well, so you can buy the jersey at the home games. And we've got other merchandise as well, hoodies and scarves and all that kind of stuff. Facebook is, for some unknown reason, it's Futera Football, because Facebook wouldn't allow us Futera United, which is bizarre. And we've also got Futera United on Instagram, and our TikTok is quite a bizarre one. I'm a 43-year-old man, so I have no idea about TikTok in any way, shape or form, but our TikTok's gone a bit crazy. We've got videos going up there, which is very much more in the Thai side of things, so in Thai language, etc. But we're getting a few that are hitting millions of views, and like we're trying to sort of bring Thai football to the masses as well. So there's quite a few videos of me explaining sort of my thoughts on Thai football, which are really hitting good numbers as well. So TikTok's been quite good for us, which is a surprise to me because I don't know how to use it and I've got no idea what it does, basically, but it does seem to be pretty good for us. So yeah, you can go on there, but futereunited.com, and you can go onto the shop, and we've got our jerseys on there.
That's the first thing I'll do when we finish this interview, Mark. I'll go and order one of the shirts because they are lovely. So what about match day? Your first game, you didn't play at your own stadium, is that right? You had to play at Bangkok University. So it looked like you had a decent crowd in. Presumably you're hoping to build on that. You've told us all about what you're doing globally and over the internet. What are you actually doing locally to engage with the community where you're going to be based?
So we've got an academy, which is in Sisaman PSW. We're trying to back that to let the kids sort of come to the games, and we're trying to put on, so for the first game, I'm putting on buses from over there for the kids to come. We'll do that for every single game as well. There's free merchandise for all the kids as well. So if kids come, they get free trading cards, as we're a trading card company, so they get free Futera United trading cards, free t-shirts for the first few games as well, which seems to be pretty popular. And then for little fan bases around different areas of Bangkok as well, we've got buses that I'm putting on to bring them straight to the game. I don't want people paying to come to games. There's no charge to come in and watch the game. And for as long as we possibly could, even in T3, I love the idea of the games being free. I'm much more interested in people coming and just watching us and getting into Futera United than I am about making money from that side of things, 100%. So yeah, buses to bring people in, and just trying to get as much of, especially the Sisaman community, which is a little way out, but they've backed me in my little football journey for many, many years now. And it's something that I wanted to make sure we give back. A lot of our players are graduates from that academy as well. So we're just trying to make sure that everything we do is giving back to that local community that sort of backed us as much as possible. We've got other stuff as well, Dale, like not just from bringing people to the games, but I'm a massive advocate for other types of football as well. So Futera United's got a walking football team. We back what will be the first ever Thailand walking football team as well, which we've put on sort of games and tournaments for them already. So we're trying to, again, get people that are stopped playing football to come and play walking football for Terry United, again, bringing them and their kids and stuff like that to come and watch the games and play on it. And the reality is that there's no point in playing football in front of 10 people. I want as many people as we possibly can to try and build that community around everybody. The dream is by the end of this season, we have 1,000 people turn up at a game. We had 450, I think, was the official numbers from the first game. I think we can probably get there. It's pretty ambitious. It's big numbers to get to a Thai semi-pro game, but I definitely think it's possible. So that's what we're pushing for, and whatever we have to do that. And as I said, free buses from different areas and stuff like that to get people to the games is part and parcel of trying to grow this club.
The early signs are very encouraging. Like you say, 450 is a decent turnout at any level, really. And I think it's good that you're doing this in the local communities, because it's one criticism that gets levelled at a lot of Thai clubs is that they don't engage enough. And this is why they don't get the crowds and why they're not sustainable. I mean, obviously there are exceptions and we all know who they are, but many clubs don't bother. So I think that's, again, that's something in your favour. You know, it's great to hear that you're doing that and you have that bond and you have that connection. So I think it's a good thing. So just before we finish, you've already mentioned you are very ambitious. Realistically, where do you see yourselves in 5 years' time?
Reality is that I want to get out of this league within 2 years. I'm holding back a little. I want to get out of this league in 1 year, if I'm completely honest. I think it's possible. I think it's a very good quality league this year, and I think Dome looks strong, and so that's going to be our biggest competition, I think. But anything can happen in that first year. But within 2 years, I want to get out, get into T3. And what you don't want to happen, Dale, is you don't want to get stuck in T3. You've got this is the most difficult league in Thailand to get out of. So, so hard to get out of T3. But if we go up to T3, we'll put everything we have to make sure that we can formulate a team that can get through that. So the ultimate ambition is within 5 years to probably just got into T2. That would be the ambition. That may be absolutely pie in the sky. There might be some people that know a lot more about Thai football sitting there going, he hasn't got a Scooby-Doo what he's talking about there. But that there has to be an ambition. So within 5 years, getting out of T3 is what we would be looking at for that. And then from there, it's anyone's guess. The infrastructure we have, it puts us in a privileged position to be able to not have to worry too much about getting sponsors in. Although we're a football club, we need sponsors. Our key sponsor at the moment is Super Sub, which is a trading card firm in Thailand run by Itty Nana family. But it does give us that ability to know that we can grow without having to desperately run out and get sponsors, which definitely gives us more decision-making capabilities. A lot of the time you're doing things because you have to get sponsors, whereas for us, we certainly are doing things because of the football club and how the football club should be run. It does make it a lot easier for that. Other than that, it's to carry on making sure that the fans and the holders are making decisions every single week that really make a difference to how we play on the pitch and what happens and goes up there. Because again, these guys, the holders have been with us since day one, and it is like a big community now. We all talk on a daily basis. I don't know any other club where you're talking to the fans, the holders, etc. on a daily basis. They're telling you their thoughts, etc. For them, I want to try and see how far we can go, because it's definitely a group effort alongside the coaching team with Coach Den and Coach Breeze. The players who have taken to this, you know, if somebody tells you that a guy 6,500 miles away is going to vote on whether or not you should play left back, I can understand if a player may be slightly sort of peeved if he doesn't then get in after the coaches have seen him be training, etc. each week. But the players have absolutely taken to it. We've got players that go into our forum, our Discord, and talk to the fans as well, tell them how they're getting on. There's definitely a lot of communication across the board. So whatever we can do to build that club there and make it as successful as it possibly can be.
That's been absolutely fascinating. Thanks so much, Mark, for coming on. I think people listening to this probably got a much clearer idea of what you're trying to do now, and you probably shattered a few myths there as well. So thank you. I do appreciate that. And I am going to go and order a shirt. And the second thing I'm going to do after I've done that is I'm going to look for your walking football, because that sounds about my level these days. So you might find yourself a new player.
We're having a game next month, and I'd love for you to come down and play for us. 100%. If you go onto our website, if you go to highlight FUFC at the top, you'll see walking football. If you click on that, it gives you a full squad list for every player that's ever played for our walking football team. We've had Didier Agat, the former Celtic player, play for us. We've had an Australian walking football international play for us. We've had a few ex-Thai professionals play for us as well. As long as you're over 40 years old, then you can play in the walking football team, and it's great fun. Really, really good sport. So 100%, if you're around, then there is a place in the team for you, Dale. No problems at all, mate.
Thank you. And I'm certainly over 40. We're not picked by people sitting thousands of miles away, are we? Nobody's going to be commenting on my skills or anything.
Well, we stream it live, so there'll be definitely people commenting.
Right.
I'm not the best player myself, though. So, I have to put up with a little bit of stick, I think, when I'm playing. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I used to really suffer when my dad came to watch me play football. When I got to about 12 or 13, I banned him from coming. I couldn't stand the abuse and the stick he gave me. So anyway, like I said, mate, that's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. Really appreciate it. And we'll be following your progress, not just this season, but beyond as well. So thanks very much, Martin. Good luck with your project.
Now, to anybody who's listening as well, if you come down to a game, come and find me, show me yourself as well, and we'll look after you at the game as well. So anybody fancies coming down, certainly come see me. It'll be great.
Yeah, fantastic, Marco. We catch up in the few weeks to come. I went to see Fatera in an away game in 2013, and Mark was most welcoming. And my biggest surprise listening to this interview, that they were still sticking by the same guns. I saw that they'd been going for a couple of years in the Bangkok Premier League. What I didn't realise, they carried on with the same concept.
It's a fascinating concept, isn't it? I mean, I do remember the days of Fatera Seeker, and I think most of us who were around at that time were quite cynical about it. But having spoken to Mark, you can have your thoughts, and you know, it's not the traditional way to do things, but his love of the game definitely came across. And you know, if you take him at face value, which we have to do, he's doing it for all the right reasons. The way he talked about fan involvement and the way that club owners treat the supporters, and we've all seen it, whatever level or in whatever country we've watched football. So it's a revolutionary idea. Now, whether it works for everyone is another matter, but they certainly seem to be on the right track, don't they?
They do. I remember a few years ago, there's a club formed in England called #United. It's not quite the same as Fatera, but it's basically complete out-of-the-box thinking. It involves the YouTube stars. I don't completely understand how it works, but it attracts youngsters in the droves watching and buying merchandise, watching online, going to games, and the non-league forum, the abuse that they were taking and how ridiculous it is. We've sometimes got to remember that it's not just about 50-year-old white Farang.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the merchandise there, and that was one thing that stuck out in the interview. Big deal is made out of, you know, the amount of replica kits that Buriram United sell, and quite rightly, you know, that's very impressive. But it seems like, and I certainly got the impression talking to Mark, that they sell even more. And that's kind of gone under the radar, hasn't it?
Well, it's worldwide, isn't it? You know, technology and the internet and everything, these things that I try and grasp, but I don't understand fully. And I think sometimes we overlook it or just ignore it because we think it's silly. But they are proving a point. If they can get 450 and ship the fans across the city from where they're based to a semi-pro game, they're doing something right.
And the fact they're engaging with the local community, that's a huge thing, because that's, again, something that, as I said in the interview, that's something that comes up quite often, that Thai clubs tend not to do that. So that's another thing in their favour, isn't it?
Definitely. If they can get a ground near their academy that's suitable for T3 and they manage to go up in the next few years, who knows?
Now, Mark mentioned the very nice Fatera kit during the course of our chat, which was voted on by the fans. And as you know, we have a regular fashion expert, Claire, on the programme. So I did ask Claire for her thoughts on the Fatera United kit, and this is what she had to say.
Hi, Dale. I've had a look at the shirt, and these are my thoughts. To be honest, it doesn't really look like a football shirt. It reminds me of the American baseball umpire shirts. It's got a kind of vintage feel, which I think it's the combination of the black with the sort of ecru cream colour. And I think the simplicity of it as well, compared with some of the shirts that you've sent, it doesn't have too many diverse features. Simple badges, everything's the same colours, keeps it nice and simple. I wouldn't go as far as to say I like it, but it's definitely not as bad as some that I've seen.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Claire.
Yeah, she's got a good eye for the fashion, as Claire.
Moving on, our next interview is with Russ Horsley, the owner of Higher Sports Academy, sometimes known as Soccer Planet on Twitter. And they're kind of a couple of steps behind Fatera United, but their ambitions lay in very similar areas. So this is the chat that I had with Russ. And then at the end of this, Rob and I'll dissect it again.
A Thai Football Podcast Interview.
I'm joined now by Russ, and Russ is from the Higher Sports Academy. So hello and welcome to the podcast, Russ.
Hiya, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to this.
No, you're more than welcome, mate. It's always great to have new people contributing to the podcast. Before we begin, can you just tell us a bit about yourself, your background, your involvement in football has been, and how you ended up running this academy and coming over to Thailand?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a frustrated player who got injured when he was 17, so I had to stop playing, took all my coaching badges, and I've always worked in football and education, combining the two. So I was one of the founders of the English Colleges FA, which is an organisation that found Nick Pope before he became a professional and England international. And I've worked for numerous clubs in Europe, several different countries. I've worked for Fulham, Leeds United, Leicester City in England, but I've worked in places such as Bulgaria, Lithuania, Cyprus, Spain, Gibraltar. Thailand really comes from an academy I was working on in Spain, and a young Thai boy came to the academy and he really struggled. He was a great lad, really intelligent, but from a football point of view, he really struggled. And we analysed why that was and ended up with the solution that actually we could deliver an academy in Thailand, which would solve some of these problems. Then COVID hit and it delayed us. So we're a little bit later than we would have hoped, but we're now here and we'll start our academy in Thailand in August.
That sounds great. And it sounds like you've got the perfect background to be involved in something like this as well. Very varied, and because I think a lot of people come here and they haven't really got much experience of traveling around and experiencing different cultures. And as you're probably aware, Thai culture being as it is, you've got to adapt to fit in, and there are things that you'd probably get away with in England that you wouldn't get away with here, and vice versa.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a qualified UEFA coach and coach educator with the FA in England, and as I say, I've worked in multiple different countries, but I've spent 18 months now pretty much non-stop in Thailand, so doing a lot of research, talking to a lot of people, getting to know the culture, as you say, getting to know the football culture, which is obviously very different to Europe, and making sure we've got everything lined up and a programme that we think can provide a good pathway for young players who are looking to play professionally, either in Thailand, Asia, or further afield in Europe, or even the Middle East, where I've got my own professional club.
So whereabouts in Thailand will you be based?
We're looking to be based in Phuket, so which obviously south of Thailand, but there's already talks about possibly having two camps, one in Phuket and then one around one of, you know, either Chiang Mai or Hua Hin, or two opportunities as well. So I think very quickly we'll end up with two campuses, but the main one, the first one, will definitely be in Phuket.
And how are you going to go about recruiting players? What's the process involved there?
Well, it's twofold. First of all, we want to recruit locally and internationally. So it's an international programme. How we'll go about that is through our own football networks. We work with numerous FAs around the world, but also bringing in local people who are familiar with Thai football, who have been involved in Thai football for multiple years, and who have good networks to young players and the schools that are currently offering various types of football programs. We're looking for 24 players in year one, so that'll be for August. And we're looking for a mixture of local players, but also from further afield. And we actually think by bringing some international players into this, it'll help the local Thai players develop as well, so that they get used to our international players train and play.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. So are you able to tell us who these people you've got involved are, or is that top secret? it could be somebody I know, that's the thing.
Yeah, we're just going through interviews at the moment, and we're talking to multiple people, but we've just agreed to work with a guy called Coach Ken, who's a former professional player in Thailand, qualified coach, and he's got African links as well, so he'll be very key to us in terms of recruiting players.
What about the age group of the players? What sort of ages are you looking at starting the kids coming in?
Right, so to start off with, it's more senior players, so we're going to be looking at 18 plus, and we're almost looking at it sort of being a gap year after players have finished their senior school education before they go on to university. But we are hoping to extend that in year two down to 16 to 18 year olds, and potentially into building our own private full-time school. That said, any player joining us at 18, we've got multiple university and education partners around the world, and if people do want to do an education package whilst they're with us, we can help them do that and give them the time within the programme to continue their studies. So we think we've got all angles based. And I say the long-term aim is to work through the age groups, but to begin with, we'll start at 18 to 21.
And is this just boys, or is it open to boys and girls?
We're open for both. So a boys programme and a female programme. They'll be slightly different, obviously, in terms of the quality of opposition the players will play against. But actually, the opportunities are very similar in terms of pathways to Dubai, the the Middle East, Europe, etc. So yeah, we want both.
I mean, the Women's League has just started, so there's a lot of interest at the moment, so hopefully you can capitalise on that as well.
Yeah, and the national team's doing quite well, so we're hoping there's a lot of interest. Obviously, women's football is becoming more high profile, and more young women now are looking at it as a professional career as opposed to part-time career, and that's why I think the pathways to Europe will be really exciting for young players, but also can lead to, you know, full-time careers for them.
And what about the clubs? Have you had much dealing with any of the Thai professional clubs?
Not so much at the moment. Obviously, we've been putting all this together and coming up with the programme and so forth. But again, as I mentioned earlier, Coach Ken, he's worked in the pro game over there for, I think it's 14 years now. So he's really, really well connected. He's got all the clubs on side. They all know him. He knows all them. And at some point in the future, maybe after year one, we want to turn this into our own club as well. He won't play in the top leagues, obviously, but hopefully we can play in the lower leagues, and that gives more experience and more pathways to our players. But we want to play against the pro clubs in Thailand, and we think it'd be beneficial for them in terms of their recruitment, and obviously enhances our programme. But we're not just limiting the experience to Thailand. We want to play clubs from across Asia, Vietnam, Cambodia, etc. So our players learn different techniques and different challenges for when they move on.
I think now's a really good time to be doing that, because I don't know if you're aware, but the semi-pro league has just started up again, which is a feeder into the top three divisions, the winners of that going. I mean, it's quite convoluted, the whole promotion and relegation process. I'm not going to go into that now, but obviously the semi-pro league is probably something you're looking for. Is that perhaps, you know, a short-term goal?
Yeah, certainly within the next 12 months we'd look to register in that and get a foothold into Thai football, and then who knows where it can go. But yeah, that'd be our starting point as a club. First year we just plan to play friendlies, if there's anything such as a friendly in football, but non-league games. And then, as I say, by year two, sort of 12 months time, we want to be entering the league, and we'll start in the semi-pro league. Yeah, absolutely.
Wish you all the best with that. I mean, on the podcast we've got a guy, Rob, my co-host, and he's really into lower league football. He goes around watching semi-pro games, and you know, you probably should be talking to him, to be honest, but he's really very knowledgeable.
Yeah, it sounds like he'd be really useful to talk to and have a conversation with, so we'll pencil that one in for some time not too far into the future.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love that. I mean, it's his passion. He does get around to a lot of lower league games, and like, so yeah, I'm sure he'd be very useful, and he'd be more than happy to share what knowledge he's got as well.
No, I really appreciate that. And semi-pro football is a really good launch pad for young people. You know, it's that stepping stone in professional football, so we see that as a really important next step for us once we've got the programme going.
It's fascinating talking to you, and like I say, you're very ambitious, and I do wish you all the best with it. As you're probably aware, it's not always that easy in Thailand. Things can take time, and there are lots of little frustrations along the way, but you sound like you're prepared to deal with all those.
Yeah, as I say, we've done our research, and we've not rushed into this. We've spent a lot of time looking at it, and the people we're bringing into it are really knowledgeable around Thai football and have been involved in it at all levels for many, many years, and they'll be vital to the success of the programme and our integration into Thai football, really. So we're really excited about it, and yes, it's a challenge, but it's a wonderful opportunity, not only for us but for the young players that will be joining the programme.
Well, I wish you all the best with it, Russ, and will you come on again in a few months' time to let us know how you're getting on?
I'd love to. That'd be great. Yeah, absolutely. And once we're up and running, you're more than welcome to come along and spend a day with us and interview some of the boys as well.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. I won't need asking twice, mate.
Sure. No problem. No, we'd look forward to it. We need people to know what we're doing and to see what we're doing. And you're a great forum for that. So we really appreciate the opportunity to talk and be involved in your podcast.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for coming on, Russ. I'm sure Dale will take up that offer of Phuket. But you're absolutely right, Dale, at the start of this. Great optimism. And I think they've got a good foundation to succeed. They couldn't be based anywhere better than Phuket, because it's probably the easiest semi-pro area to get into the T3.
Although it's in the news for all the wrong reasons just lately, isn't it? You might want to check all the paperwork and make sure they've not encroached on any public land or anything, and mind the P's and Q's when they're down there.
But don't be signing any Swiss players on. That's a tip.
I'm sure they've done all that. I mean, Russ did say they've been very diligent. And again, you know, it's fantastic. They want to invest, and they they want to try and do something. And it'd be interesting to see if, you know, Russ has already got that club in the Middle East. So if they can set something up in a couple of years here, who knows? You know, 10 years from now, we could be talking about Phuket Town against Futera United in T1, challenging for the title.
Many people have tried and failed in Phuket to have a successful Thailand League club. So there is a chance, there's a big market waiting to be grasped if it's done correctly.
I agree. I had a couple of friends who followed the old Phuket team, and they were convinced for a while that, you know, they were going to be Premier League as it was then, TPL, but sadly things didn't work out. So yeah, here's hoping. And again, you know, all the best to Russ. And I certainly will be taking him up, and Mark for his walking football, which I think is probably more my market these days. I struggle to get out of bed some mornings.
I reckon we should be putting a podcast team together to give them a game of walking football.
Ah, there's an idea. Oh, yeah. Rob, not thought about that. Right, okay. Anyone's interested in representing a Thai football podcast in a walking football competition, you know what to do.
Hi, my name's John, and I'm listening to Thai Football Podcast.
Now, moving on from the professionals, as we have to call them, Mark and Russ, we've had a fantastic submission this week from one of our regular contributors, Bill Greaves, the Sucker Thai fan. Now, Bill has given this a lot of thought, and he's put a lot of hard work into this, and I think that there's some fantastically radical ideas. He's clearly been thinking outside the box. And this is Bill with his ideas for clubs to engage with the community, bring in more fans, and build on the platforms that they already have.
How does a club prepare for the new season? The team signs new players, they train and play friendly games, they get to know each other, and they get used to playing together as a team. What does the club do to get new supporters? This is where we run into a contradiction of terms. In Thailand, a contradiction in terms? Never. I have been told that the club's main priority is pleasing their sponsor. Making them happy is more important than putting bottoms in the stadium seats. The Firebats are sponsored by Chang, and they like to start a season with a party. Two seasons ago, it was very successful. A marquee was set up in the car park, a band appeared on stage, players and coaches showed up, there was free food everywhere. The beer was flowing and free. The morning after, many were sporting headaches. Were there any new supporters or tickets sold? No. It was a cost to the sponsor with no material benefit. This season was a lot worse. The event was staged during a rainstorm. It was disorganized and chaotic, and I don't know what happened next because I took my soaked feet home without finding any food or beer. I was a decidedly grumpy old man. Wouldn't it be better if we kicked off the new season with an event that benefited everyone? Happy people everywhere. Cost-free sponsors with a dramatically improved public image. Hundreds of potential new supporters, perhaps eager to sit in the stadium for the first time. And club owners awash with pride in their community, participation and vitality. Enter the pre-season spectacle, the Feed the Poor Day. The club should sponsor and promote a day to feed all the poor people in the local community. It wouldn't be that hard to do. First of all, you would need to find a temple willing to work with you. Then you would need a group of volunteers to work the phones and do all the other essentials. Most clubs, including the Firebats, have groups of supporters active on social media, and their aid and assistance would be vital. Contact with the local radio stations and any other willing media sources would also be a good idea. Then we turn to the donations. One bag of rice from each rice mill within 50 kilometers of the stadium would be a great start. Fruit, bananas, oranges, pineapples from local growers would be wonderful. Same with vegetables and appealed to local growers from the radio stations and the social media should provide a wide selection. Meat might be more difficult, but an appeal to local slaughterhouses, butchers and grocery stores would help. Bakers and agrarian grocery stores could be appealed to for bread and buns. With some organization, this event should attract the attention of the local, national, and perhaps even international media. Could local restaurants, mindful of the publicity, be persuaded to set up shop and give away free food for the day? Now that we have a temple teeming with all kinds of nutrition, who is going to cook it? The vendors usually stationed around the stadium on game day would be a good start, but any stall vendor willing to participate would be welcome. Then, how do we get the poor to the temple? We use songtows and tuk-tuks. Every batch of poor that they deliver to the temple, the driver will be rewarded with a ticket to the opening game. In fact, tickets to the opening game would be the currency used to reward cooking vendors, radio stations, and everyone willing to donate their time for the benefit of the Feed the Poor Day. Any financial requirements could be met with a whip round of the club managers and players. A 5,000 baht per person donation from the owners, coaches and players would suffice for most needs. Supporters, social media sites could be asked for donations, which I believe they would enthusiastically give. The club's bank? Perish the thought. Now, can you just imagine the day itself? Songtows and tuk-tuks dropping off the poor and hungry? Monks busily helping everyone? Vendors cooking up all kinds of food and restaurants open for business. Club owners and executives strutting around in their club blazers. Players in their tracksuits. The proudest and happiest of all would be the Chang executives. Always cursed with making enormous profits by selling the evil beer, Chang executives could now sit back and smile as they charitably give away free, healthy, clean water to the assembled masses. A wonderful day for all. The pride enjoyed by the club owners, executives, and sponsors would be incalculable. And then the home opener itself for the new season. The seats would be full from all the free tickets given away. Many coming to a game for the first time, hopefully returning for more. Pre-game, the scoreboard would be presenting a never-ending clip of groups of helpers. Rice mill people donating bags of rice, farmers donating fruits and vegetables, groups of vendors cooking up food, tuk-tuk drivers with poor people, songtow drivers clutching free tickets, club and sponsors, executives wearing enormous smiles and grins, and please, just for me, a group of smiling Chang girls handing out free bottled water. An essential free Feed the Poor activity would be ensuring that every donor and every helper was photographed for the stadium thank you. Pride in the club and from all and sundry would be enormous. The club would be firmly established as part of the community. All that would be missing is a win on the park.
Bill, you've come up trumps. What a brilliant idea. In the unlikely event that any club owners are listening to this podcast, what have you got to lose? It's not going to lose you any money. It's going to build you a lot of credibility in the community, regionally and even nationally. It's a fantastic idea, Bill.
I was not expecting that. Bill offered to send in an opinion piece and I thought he was going to slag Chonburi off again like he did in his match report last week. I had to listen to it three or four times to take it all in. You know, when someone's prepared to put that much effort into thinking up these ideas, you think, wouldn't it be great if clubs put as much thought into it as Bill clearly has done there?
I know that there'll be people who say, oh, it'll never happen, and they'll probably think that Fatira are cranks and Russ is onto a loser. But if you don't have positivity, we might as well pack in.
Yeah, there'll always be people looking to pick faults, won't there, I guess. But the three people we've had on this week have just been so positive. They're all looking to the future. They're all looking to improve things. My only concern is with Bill's idea is that a lot of Thai clubs try and do things with the minimum amount of effort. They're not prepared to go that extra mile. And that obviously would take quite a lot of work. If they're prepared to do it, it could pay off. But that's down to the clubs, isn't it?
Well, there's one thing for sure, Dale. They won't be losing anything from it. You're right. There's too many times clubs will try something and then forget about it. You know, it's like waking up in the morning, I'll do that today, and then forgetting about it tomorrow. The only way to build is gradually. Get people involved. Keep them occupied.
That's probably where we should leave it, on a very positive note. It's been very good this week, Rob. I've really enjoyed that. And thanks to Mark and Russ and Bill for taking the time to do that. Really appreciate it.
Just in closing, Dale, I'd like to wish you a safe journey home, mate. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you. It'll be spring when I get back. So again, another reason to be optimistic. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week. We'll